Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, the cast of the Thursday Murder Club on Netflix, including Sir Ben Kingsley, Naomi Ackie and Celia Imrie, the stars of the new Sky series Atomic, including Alfie Allen, Theon Greyjoy from Game of Thrones, plus a fantastic new Irish movie called Christie. I talk to its up-and-coming star, Danny Power, as well as its director, Brendan Canty. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the News Talk app powered by Go Loud or wherever you get your podcasts. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on News Talk. Now, we have a very busy show this week. I'll have to dispense with my normal, how's your week been, how's my been, too many guests, but they're all good guests. So without further ado, let's get to this.
There she is, Joyce.
Are you a nurse?
Bang on target.
I'm Elizabeth.
Would you take a look at that for me, please?
Dear God.
'Tis a lot of blood.
Would you care to join us to discuss things further?
Who is us?
I'm sorry, how rude of me. We're the Thursday Murder Club. We investigate cold cases. It's a club about murder.
Does sound a bit bonkers.
In breaking news,
there's been a murder. An actual murder.
The victim appears to have been bludgeoned to death.
Now we've got a real case to solve, isn't it wonderful? Obviously, RIP and all that.
And how do we catch them?
What we need is a man or a woman on the inside.
Would you like to be investigating the murder?
Who do you think you are, the head of MI5?
We'd better get started.
Yes, intermediate knitting starts here in 1 hour.
Now that was a clip from the Netflix film that launched on Thursday, the Netflix version of the incredibly popular and successful The Thursday Murder Club, based on the international bestseller by Richard Osman. And there's been a succession of books after it, like The Man Who Wasn't There, I think it was, and The Bullet That Missed. I read the first Thursday Murder Club book because everyone else was reading it. Very entertaining, even though it's about murders. It's a kind of jolly English story. In case you don't know, in the book and indeed in the movie, it's all about four, I suppose, irrepressible retirees. In the movie, Elizabeth, played by Helen Mirren, Ron, played by our own Pierce Brosnan, Ibrahim, played by the great Ben Kingsley, and Joyce, played by Celia Imrie. They spend their time solving cold case murders kind of for fun instead of going to knitting classes. It all takes place in Cooper's Chase, this very fancy kind of retirement village. When an unexplained death occurs on their own doorstep, their casual sleuthing takes a thrilling turn as they find themselves with a real whodunit on their hands. It's directed by Chris Columbus, and it is a very honest retelling of the book. It's exactly like the book, and reviews are varied. I found it just as cozy and warm as the books. It's not going to change your life, but it's entertaining. And if you're a fan of the Thursday Murder Club book, I do think you will be a fan of the film, which is now on Netflix. So it stars a huge cast of English talent. David Tennant is in there as well. But I'm going to talk to a couple of the cast now. Well, I already did, but you're going to hear my chats with them now. Ibrahim, played by Ben Kingsley, is one of the Thursday Murder Club. He's a confirmed bachelor, respected psychiatrist of Egyptian descent, softly spoken, empathetic, very cultured, highly intelligent, cautious, maybe a bit pedantic, but a very decent guy, and whose insights into the murder are very telling. Joyce is an ex-nurse, a newcomer in Cooper's Chase, the mother of a very successful hedge fund manager. She loves baking cakes. She's eager to please. She befriends Elizabeth Helen Mirren's character. People are drawn to her. Maybe she's not entirely sure what's going on always, but maybe there's a bit more to her than people give her credit for. Joyce, as I say, is played by Celia Imrie. Now, Ben Kingsley needs no introduction. Schindler's List, Gandhi. Celia Imrie doesn't need much of an introduction either, I would say. English acting royalty from Bridget Jones's Diary, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, The Diplomat, The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. They are quite simply English acting royalty, Ben Kingsley and Celia Imrie. I should mention in my chat with them now that they Well, Ben Kingsley uses a naughty word, and I repeat it. So please don't complain. I'm giving you due warning. It was very appropriate to the conversation. And I spoke to them early in the morning, hence the interview begins with a good morning. How are you?
Yes, I just woke up to your voice.
There's worse things to wake up to. Well, yeah. or maybe there isn't.
Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Dublin and Ireland, and I'm a huge admirer of both you. So it's a real pleasure. It's a great way to start the day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Celia, if I can start with you, you know, Joyce, I read the book and then I watched the film last night and enjoyed both thoroughly. You know, she misses certain things and maybe she's not the smartest person in the room at times. But then at other times you think maybe she's some kind of Shakespearean fool who's actually having the last laugh and knows more than going on. But you tell me how you see her.
Oh, no, I love the idea of being Shakespearean fool. I think that's hilarious. I think she's underestimated a bit, but she's struggling to be approved of. But I think, yeah, I think she's got some secrets. But yeah. I love that idea. Thank you.
Okay. You can keep it all day, free of charge. Ben, you know, often...
I'll be Lear. Yes. If Celia is the fool, I'll be King Lear.
I can't think of anything better.
We might be onto something now. Ben, you know, often if people are quoting Carl Jung, they can be seen as quite pretentious when they throw it into conversations. Yet Abraham, I don't think, has any pretensions. He's a thoroughly decent man who wants to solve the case and just happens to be highly educated. But again, how do you see him?
I think you've summed him up really well, just as accurately as your attempt to sum up Celia. But you see, the joy of being filmmakers and presenting something to an audience, just like yourself, John, every single person in the audience will have a different connection to every single character on the screen. Mm. That they will project something or they receive something on a certain level with a certain timbre. So I hope that this film is an example of that, because what this film is not, it is not manipulative. We are not telling people what to think. It's rather like a Chekhov play. We are presenting it to the audience and they make of it as individuals what they will. Mm. So I am actually rather reluctant to describe Ibrahim with respect to you, John, because every single person who watches my attempt, my portrait, if you like, of Ibrahim, will take something different. Mm. I do remember as an actor, and this is so gratifying when this happens, when somebody actually approached me in the street and they said, "How did you know about my dad?"
Oh,
isn't it?
Wow.
Yes. That's wonderful. When on the screen or on stage, there's that resonance, and that's what's great about being a storyteller. It's that connection is so precious, and I hope it never ends at all. And I hope I avoided answering your question brilliantly.
Absolutely. You should be a politician. I know you've played them in the past.
Oh, no, that's not fair.
No, I'm joking, of course. I could just listen to you talk about this all day. It seems to me, and you're talking to an Irish person, but Murder Club, both in the book and the movie, I don't know, represents the best of Britain in a weird kind of way. There was such a pleasing feeling about it. Now, I know that's a very big question in a short interview, but I wonder, do either of you get what I'm intimating? That to me, this is the Britain we would have loved as a kid.
Totally. And also, I know that our director, Christopher Columbus, he loves certain British films, like the David Lean films and that heritage we have and that language we share. And he lovingly filmed it.
And all wrapped up in the countryside. That's he calls it the fifth character. And he's absolutely right, actually, because without that surrounding, that gives it its Englishness, I think.
Yeah, lovely said.
Without sort of talking about it, it's just there.
Yeah. Just in closing then, Ben, there are literally hundreds of things I could talk to you about. And you might think this is the weirdest question he would ask me about all the career I've had. But despite Oscars and all that kind of stuff, You were in The Sopranos, which to my mind is one of the greatest TV shows ever made. And you played yourself sending up the whole Hollywood merch thing. And I just thought, this is incredible. And I thought, how on earth did Ben Kingsley, how did The Sopranos get him? And how did he say yes to that?
Well, I suppose I said yes for all the sensible reasons, which is money, and meeting those wonderful guys. It's a window to look through and to be part of that hopefully we love to surprise our audiences. We hate to be put into a pigeonhole, go on. Mm.
No, I just adored The Sopranos and I had no idea you were in it.
Yeah, my favourite, I'm not allowed to quote my favourite line, am I, from Sopranos.
Why not?
We could give it a go and see what happens. This is pre-recorded, you know.
Go on.
My favourite line?
Yes, please.
Oh, fuck.
But my estimation of you has gone sky high now, even more. Not estimation, my admiration.
Self-satirizing, what an opportunity.
Well, here's the thing, we're out of time, but I think I've now got my new ringtone, Ben Kingsley saying, ah, oh, fuck. So, to me, guys, we're out of time. It was lovely to see both of you.
Lovely to
continued
see you
success.
Too.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Ben Kingsley there, talking about The Sopranos and, of course, The Thursday Murder Club, which is now on Netflix. You also heard me talking there to his co-star, Celia Imrie, who plays Joyce in The Thursday Murder Club. Now, outside of the retirees in The Thursday Murder Club, we do have two police personnel. There's a DCI, Chris Hudson, who's kind of a dedicated detective. Home life isn't great, hasn't coped well with a divorce. He kind of wants romance in his life, but a small town cop kind of in essence, and hasn't had to deal with very big cases. And he comes up against and is somewhat outmaneuvered by these clever pensioners in The Thursday Murder Club. And he's played by Daniel Mays, the English actor. And we also have his, I suppose, assistant, PC Donna DeFreitas, played by Naomi Aki. She's a young police officer who's recently found herself transferred from London down to Kent, where all of this takes place. She's very intelligent, observant, resilient, and she's not been given much good work to do, but the Thursday Murder Club bring her in and realise there's a lot to her and want her involved in this murder that they're investigating. So I got to talk to the actress who plays PC Donna DeFreitas, the great Naomi Aki, who's been in Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. She played Whitney Houston in that recent biopic. A brilliant young actress. Chris Hudson, the detective Chris Hudson, played by Daniel Mays, or Danny, as some people like to call him, was also in Star Wars Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. He was in Line of Duty. Great English actor as well. So I spoke to Danny Mays and Naomi Aki about their roles as the two police people in The Thursday Murder Club. And it's lovely to be a member of The Thursday Murder Club, albeit for 6 minutes. the funny thing is, and I pride myself on being good with people's names, but I've written down Naomi and Daniel, despite the fact that you're both very well-known actors, because I was really tempted to call one of you Donna and one of you Chris, so that's a real compliment. You'll be pleased to hear.
We've encapsulated the roles so well that you can only see the characters.
You might have liked that.
Yeah.
Pretty
we've
much.
Job of
you
massive.
Have. Case closed. In fact, we don't need to do this interview, it would seem.
Yeah, you can call me Donna if you want.
Let's not get into that. Naomi, but as Donna, I like the fact that, because I read the book as well, that in a way you begin not gormless, but you're slightly out of your depth, it seems. Yeah. And you're really keen to be involved. And by the end of it and the arc of the movie in the book, you seem a lot more competent than Daniel's character. I presume that's a big appeal.
What's fun?
No acting required there, to be fair.
I think, you know, that what you say about like a character arc is really important with any character. And I feel like all the characters in this, I think that's why it's such a satisfying film. They learn something at the end, they come to some sort of conclusion, they grow. It's just, I mean, that's just ripe with like comedic potential.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I think like Donna is really hungry for something more, and has this opportunity to like show everyone what she can do, even if she makes a few mistakes. And you know, is quite lucky to fall into this small town.
But she, in many respects, she teaches him a thing or two about policing because she's obviously from the Metropolitan Police from London, and Chris is very comfortable. He's a bit like a country cop, not much goes on, really. If there's a cat lost up a tree, that's about as
He's
exciting as
there.
it gets.
Yeah.
They're a kind of an odd couple in a way,
Yeah.
but I love the fact that as the film progresses, Chris gains more and more respect for Donna,
Yeah.
which is a great sort of dynamic to play with.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, Naomi said that Donna's character is hungry. Yours is actually hungry. He's kind of food orientated
There's
kind
a
of
food
guy.
theme running through the press junket interview now. There's a lot of food consumed, yes. Someone had to do it. What are you going
It's the cakes.
to
Wait,
do?
talk about the first day, because that was actually a good day. The cake was tasty too.
Yeah.
On this film were
They were
insane.
really
They
good.
were just, you know,
Thick.
yeah.
They were.
So is it the case? Sorry, I don't mean to be talking about food when there's so much,
No,
you
go
know,
for
high
it.
drama to discuss. But you know, when
Yeah.
it comes to booze or stuff, you drink colored water or whatever. Those cakes you were eating were actually tasty cakes.
They were cakes, man.
Yeah, I mean
Definitely
the
cakes.
big set too when you know like he's hemmed in on the sofa and he sort of devours the cake just with he's got no hands
With
free.
his mouth.
Oh yeah, with his mouth as you do. Obviously you have to do take after take, so I really had to suffer
We
for
just
my
wanted
art.
to
What
go
can you
through
say? You know,
it. Just
tell
bring
me,
new cakes every time. They had like
a
conveyor belt of cakes.
Let's move off the cakes.
Yeah.
I was talking to Sir Ben Kingsley a few minutes ago and Celia Imran. And you know, Pierce Brosnan, my countryman, is in this. Helen Mirren. You guys are well-known actresses, but this is like the Mount Rushmore of,
Yeah, it's a great way of
you
describing
know,
it.
acting talent, not just England, Ireland, all over. Is it like, I don't know. You guys are well into your careers, but I don't know. Do you raise your game when you're around that? Is it kind of like a tennis match nearly, or is it intimidating?
I did find myself sometimes being like, that's Helen Mirren looking at me, saying words.
Yeah, you
Do you
do
know
have
what I mean?
those
You're like,
moments.
oh, that's Helen Mirren. That is Ben Kingsley.
I think it does, you know, raise you are forced to raise your game. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of, but that's a there's a certain pressure that comes with it, but that's a positive thing, you know.
So, like, it's the amazing thing about them as well is that they're so welcoming as
Yeah.
actors and as people, so that it became a kind of you raise your game, but I don't think consciously. It's
Yeah.
just like what they're giving is so cool and fun that
Yeah.
you want to give it back.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the fun of acting
Yeah.
anyway.
And those were the people just in the scenes with you. You had Chris Columbus behind the camera, obviously Anne Boleyn and Steven Spielberg producing the whole thing. So everywhere you looked, you know what
You're
I mean? I
like,
was surprised we cut
very
out. We
important.
got out the trailer, to be fair. Yeah.
Well, listen, we're out of time, unfortunately. I was going to ask you about Star Wars because you were both in it, but we'll do that because I'm a Star Wars junkie, but we'll do that the next time. The Thursday
Okay.
Murder Club is great, and I've enjoyed my 6 minutes as a member of it. So continued success to both of you.
Thank you
You're a
so
member
much.
for life now. You've got to know
Yeah.
that.
Absolutely. I'll
We
see you
don't
on
know
the next one.
that. Yeah.
Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Daniel Mays and Naomi Ackie there talking to me about their respective roles as the DCI Chris Hudson and PC Donna DeFratis in The Thursday Murder Club, which is now on Netflix for your streaming pleasure. After the break, the stars of the new Sky series Atomic. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talks TV and Movie Show. Now I also got to see this week.
So are you a jihadi, man?
You don't even understand what the word jihad means.
I know what it means. Find someone who doesn't believe what you believe and kill him.
No. Jihad just means struggle. Could be anything. Making a living, raising a family, personal struggles each of us has with the test that Allah sends us through our lives.
So that was a test today, was it, from God? When you shot your mates?
The choices you make in trying to overcome the tests determine whether you're one of the righteous or one of the damned.
Why'd you shoot him?
I'm one of the damned. And you, you're a delivery driver. Yeah, you could have worked for Amazon.
They don't pay as good as this. And I'm not a delivery driver. I'm a drug trafficker. It's not just drugs I smuggle.
No.
Nah. I smuggle antiquities too. That's what I'm going to Beirut for.
What antiquities?
Statues.
Yes, now that is a clip from a new series on Sky Atlantic and on Now TV called Atomic. It launched as a two-parter. Well, the first two episodes on Thursday night on Sky, and it's a five-parter, all of which I've seen, and it's pretty terrific because it stars, who you heard there, Alfie Allen and Shahzid Latif as this mismatched pair, almost like, you know, a bad buddy movie, but they're bad guys, well, to an extent. Max, played by Alfie Allen, is a drug smuggler who then meets the enigmatic JJ while on a kind of drug smuggling mission in North Africa. And they kind of get swept up in a pretty high-octane, crazy adventure involving a mysterious package, let's call it, two packages that they're transporting. And it's not a spoiler, really, because it's in the trailer. It's uranium they happen to be transporting. And soon, extremists, the CIA, are involved. As I say, high octane, really entertaining. I mean, gritty, serious in places, but also very funny. Shades of Midnight Run in it. I was kind of surprised by how much I enjoyed this. It's also getting very good reviews, not just from me, but from lots of other people. And in a way, the trailer may not have done it service. It just seemed like a kind of throwaway TV show about two guys who are up to no good, but there's a lot more going on in this. So it stars Alfie Allen, who will always, I think, be known for playing Theon Greyjoy in Game of Thrones. And he did so very well for, I think, all eight seasons, if I'm not mistaken. He was also in John Wick and Jojo Rabbit. Shahzid Latif, for many, will always be known for almost a cameo role in Toast of London, where he played the very funny Clem Fandango. I won't explain who that is. If you've seen Toast of London, you'll know it's a very funny recurring small character. I spoke to Shahzid 2 years ago or last year for a decent rom-com called What's Love Got to Do With It, all about arranged marriages. He was also in Star Trek Discovery. So I got to talk to Shahzid Latif and Alfie Allen about the roles in Atomic earlier in the week. Congratulations on the show. Very entertaining. And I was thinking it's kind of old school. It's two buddies largely in the desert. I know there's nuclear power, which is kind of modern, but there's an old school vibe. But there's kind of Midnight Run vibes to it or something like that. But I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that appealed to me. Discuss.
That was one of my references, Midnight Run and Sicario. I was jamming those two together because my character is quite guarded, silent. I tried to get him to say as I tried to cut as many lines as possible because I wanted to be really quiet. But yeah, that was definitely one of the references. It felt like a Western. It felt like Sicario. It felt like, but then the buddy element, you know.
Yeah, and Alfie, the buddy element. I mean, do you have to work on that? Or, you know, I know it's acting and you guys can do this kind of stuff, but did you have to spend a bit of time befriending the man beside you beforehand? Or because it seems like a good, that awkward kind of friendship that becomes real. You kind of had it as soon as I started watching it. Did you have to work that up?
I think, you know, Greg's writing, which is one of the kind of reasons that, you know, one of the massive things that drew me towards the project in the first place, really lends itself to that that relationship developing kind of naturally on screen. It was, you know, you've got these two kind of anti-heroes who are morally kind of ambiguous anyway. So it's, I hope for viewers who watch this, it's going to be something that can kind of ask questions of themselves about kind of, who are these guys? And that's kind of what Max is constantly trying to do with JJ. He's just kind of chipping away at him. It was definitely helpful to have something like the Euros going on while we were shooting this show because we just...
Why?
because we just sat and watched football.
Okay.
Yeah. and so that was one thing that kind of I didn't feel forced at all because we both like football. And so
based my character on Harry Kane.
Not Harry Kane, an Arsenal fan. Come on, never.
You're talking to an Irishman who hasn't, unfortunately, we haven't been in a championship in a long time. So I'm very jealous. I'm very jealous. Shazad, the, you know, you're, and Alfie kind of mentioned it, who you are is interesting because it's only slowly revealed JJ's character. And I don't want to say too much, but there's a funny moment where you, let's just say you do something in a nightclub that I didn't really expect to happen. Yeah. And then the character, he goes in various different ways. I presume that's an appealing thing when you read it, that this guy's very layered and you might have an idea of who he is, or I certainly did when we first see him. And by the time we get to the end, it's very different.
I think that is the joy, yeah, just unraveling different things and, yeah, taking him and putting him in situations that, one, he probably hasn't been in as a character, but also that the audience get to see just various different things, but sort of know the core of him. They think they know the core, and then it's, like, flipped. And I think that's just keeping the audience guessing, and fun to film. And
yeah.
All those different things.
And Alfie, talking of filming, the stunts are pretty old school in it as well, and good. And there's car chases, and that's where I get the old school vibe from it. And there doesn't seem to be any trace of CGI in it. Did you do a lot of these yourself?
I did, yeah. Do you know what? It's true. I didn't even really think about that myself, that there is not really hardly any CGI in this.
Yeah.
It's all done for real, which is, I always would prefer that as an actor and a viewer. But yeah, I did do a lot of the driving stuff. Whatever they would allow me to do, I like driving a lot, and so it was a real pleasure to be able to get behind the wheel and have somebody say, "Go as fast as you can from point A."
I go, "What?
Yeah,
there's no seatbelt. What?"
Yeah. Alfie, just as I have you, I've spoken to lots of people from Owen Teal to Aidan Gillen who were in that show, Game of Thrones. And what always comes up, because, you know, there's been master's thesis written about it, but what always comes up, it's always surprising when I talk to people about that, is how surprised they are at how recognizable they became in the strangest of places. I remember Owen Teal telling me he was in Papua New Guinea, thinking he was away from all this. And then someone started talking to him about it. Again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but was that your experience, that you were maybe in far-flung places and yet people were talking to you about Mr. Greyjoy?
Yeah, I mean, one funny moment that happened with me, I went for a hike and I found this cave, and I went in the cave, and literally it felt like this kind of tunnel just went into the middle of this mountain. It went on for ages, and I got to the end. There was a dead end, and there was a guy at the end of this tunnel just sitting on his laptop. I don't know what he was doing. No. He was like, I swear to God, he's not a geologist or something. And there was just me and him there, and I just came and I saw him, and he was just like, "Oh, it's you." How can this happen?
Also, forget about that. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know what he was doing there. He had his little, like, you know, cap with the torch on, and he was doing something.
He was watching Game of Thrones. That'd be great. So, I like to watch it in there.
It did make me laugh. It was like what a bizarre place for that to happen. But
what cave was that?
It was in Arizona. I was in Arizona.
Oh, wow.
And yeah.
A cave in Arizona,
yeah.
Shazad, I wonder, you know, if you were to go on and win an Emmy, or maybe even win an Oscar, or be in a TV or a movie or a TV show that's the most profitable thing of all time, do you think people like me and people on the street will always ask you about Clem Fandango? Or do you imagine a time that won't happen?
I hope they do. And when that happens, I hope you still do. Yeah. And of course, I mean, that was the most fun of it. I got to work with Larry David on that show.
It's incredible.
It's like, and for the people that love it and people that know it, it was the most fun, man. It wasn't like you just go to work and watch people mess around and silliest things. And I love absurd comedy anyway. And so it's just beautiful. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I could even ask you about it, but I'm awfully glad I did.
Of course you can.
Yeah. Super. Well, listen, Atomic is a very entertaining watch, and I hope it travels far and wide, and that the people will continue to talk to you about Atomic as well as Clem Fandango. Nice to see you guys. Thanks a million.
Thank you,
man. Appreciate it.
Shahzad Latif and Alfie Allen there talking to me about the new Sky Atlantic and Now TV series Atomic. Very entertaining stuff. So do check it out. After the break, a brilliant new Irish movie called Christie. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talk's TV and movie show. Now, opening in cinemas this Friday is Christie, which tells the story of a 17-year-old Christie who's at a crossroads. He's kicked out of a suburban foster home and he moves in with his estranged older brother Shane and his young family. As far as Shane is concerned, this is a temporary arrangement, but Christie begins to feel at home on Cork's working class north side. As he makes friends and begins to let the community in and possibly even find a job he didn't know he could do, he also reconnects with his past through his seemingly more corrupting extended family, despite Shane's efforts to protect him. Shane wants something better for Christie at any cost, even if it means he has to push him away. As the brothers look to reconcile their turbulent past, their family and their community offer hope for Christie's future. The film is gritty yet heartwarming. I thought it was terrific. If you don't believe me, you only need to look at the fact that it won the Best Irish Feature at this year's Galway Film Flat. And only this morning, I read a 4-star review in the film paper of record, The Guardian. I should mention the film also features members of The Cabin Studio, a Cork-based community arts collective known for its work in hip-hop and spoken word. Last year, The Cabin Crew's viral hit The Spark, recorded in collaboration with Liz Dún Varna Crew, amassed over 1 billion views and was hailed as the song of the summer by an equally august publication in the form of The New York Times. Christie was directed by Brendan Canty and it's based on a previous short movie he did, Christie. His previous work includes the award-winning short For You, starring Barry Keoghan, and a small music video you may have heard of called Take Me to Church, which I think at this stage has something like 2 billion views. Now, in Christie, the aforementioned Christie is played by Danny Power, who you may know from such things as Bring Them Down, which we featured in the show last year, and of course, The Young Offenders. This is a terrific film, and I'm delighted to say that Brendan Canty and Danny Power join me now. Guys, how are you?
We're very good, thank you.
Good, good, all good.
Good, good. Brendan, I'm wondering the genesis of this story. It was an idea you had with your writing partner, Alan O'Connor, and then you did a short, and now it's a feature debut, but what strikes me about it is, and I said it's not a depressing movie and it's heartwarming, but I suppose one of the points it makes, or one of the points it starts off with, is that the care system kind of has estranged these two brothers. And I'm wondering, was that the idea? Was that where the genesis of the idea came, that when people are left in foster care or in the care of the state, things can go wrong?
Not necessarily. Like, our films isn't, I wouldn't say, meant to make any kind of political comments on the care system or whatever. Mm-hmm. The story kind of evolved that way because of experiences we had with friends and people we knew. And Alan taught in a school in Manchester where he would have worked with kids from the care system over there. And his mum's a social worker. So it just kind of very organically went in those places, but not for any reason that we wanted to make a comment on things. No.
Right. Okay. And I mean, was there a kind of maybe Cain and Abel vibe in your head as well? This idea of two, not that it's a biblical story or anything like that, but two brothers trying to possibly reconnect. Was that part of the initial idea?
Yeah, definitely. And like the short film was mainly about Christie, and his brother played a smaller part. And I think the actor who plays Shane, the brother, Dermot Noyes,
yeah,
even though he had such a small part in the short film, he came down and invested so much time that we just, and he's such an incredible actor himself, we just wanted to explore his character so much more. And his dynamic with Danny was so strong that it was just very intriguing. And then exploring this brother thing, but maybe more so just exploring kind of men and the Irish men and how their lack of communication and just all of that masculinity, I guess, was kind of the thing. And these two brothers seem like the way into that, I think.
Yeah. Danny, you know, people may know, and I was reading about you this morning, you don't have formal training as an actor. Not that that matters, really. Now more than ever, it doesn't matter. But I was blown away by your performance. It's so real. It's so gritty. It felt like, I don't know, could have been a documentary or something. You might say to me, well, that's the job. But I'm just wondering, how did you do it so well? How did you inhabit Christy seemingly so easily?
Really, I just kind of, I found his, sorted out his background, kind of found out where he came from, when he left his brother, when his mother passed, you know, I was sorting all this out in my head, but also I felt a really, really emotional connection to him. I felt a lot of the emotions that he felt, which was a lot easier to kind of bring him into me. So it's like a kind of 50-50 split of Danny and Christy. So it was it was different to what I've done before, because I've never played such a big role or had to go into such emotional detail with scenes. So it was different, but I got there in the end.
You certainly did. You definitely got there. And I mean, you mentioned you haven't had this starring role before. I mean, was it tiring at the end of the day, or were you kind of euphoric when Brendan shouted cut at the end of the day? Or I mean, did it take a lot out of you to go, because you do go to depths in this?
Yeah, it's there was a lot of stuff in this where I went to places that I've never went to before, and it was it took a lot out of me. It's hard work, you know. It's fucking every single, like, you know, when you're acting normally, you kind of get breaks in between. Mm-hmm. Some days you have off, you're not in some scenes. Whereas with Christy, like, Christy was in nearly every single scene. So it was hard. It was, at the end, I was kind of, oh, thank God it's over. But then when you watch it, you're like, oh God, I just want to go back and do the whole thing again.
Yeah. And either of you can answer this, but how did you get picked for this? Brendan, you saw him in this collective I mentioned earlier. Is that how it came about? He was rapping and you just thought there's something about him?
Yeah, exactly. So Gary McCarthy, who runs the cabin, would have sent me like a clip of Danny kind of auditioning for the short film back in 2019. And he was just very natural and he had an amazing presence and he was a rapper as well. And we quickly learned that, like, all of these young people from the cabin are rappers and they kind of made for really good actors, but Danny especially. And originally he actually wasn't meant to be the part of Christy, and something happened with the other actor anyway, and Danny was promoted, and as soon as he got the part though, something like really transformed. It was like he was empowered or given the confidence, and suddenly he was like transformed into this like just incredible actor that you see in this film and in the short film as well. And we kind of never went back, and yeah, some people just have it, like, you know. And yeah, such a natural talent.
He has it. And the Cabin Collective, or the Cabin Crew, I should say, and that's Cabin with a K, in case Michael O'Leary is listening. They, a lot of the people we see in the movie out in the green at these parties, they're from that rapping collective, and they're great and naturals. They're in the movie.
Yeah, they're in the movie. I mean, they kind of, they make up a lot of the main cast, but also they make up a lot of the extras, and they also make up a lot of the people behind the scenes as well. Cause the cabin is, you know, it's a place that teaches kids how to make hip hop. So there's also young people up there making beats and producing and doing podcasts and doing all sorts of stuff, organizing, coordinating their gigs and events. So like a lot of these people ended up working in our crew as well. Like, so it was, the film kind of really became this community project, which was an extension of their community project, you know. It was really something different and something special.
Absolutely. Danny, you know, one of the things that I like about Christy's character is, I think it's a line from a U2 song, but the hurt you hide and the joy you hold. And that's part of the magic of this movie. You're bruised, you're a bit broken by stuff that has happened to you, but you have a great capacity for thinking things might get better, and there's maybe something good around the corner for you. Was it, I don't want to be too intellectual about it, but kind of holding those two facets to Christie, was that a tough thing to do, or was that something you were aware of when you were playing him?
Yeah, I don't really think it was a tough thing to do. I think it's just, I think that happens in a lot of men, really. They're able to be broken inside, but always hope for something better to come around the corner, you know, and it's just a thing that we do to ourselves. So I felt like I had a kid at a very young age, you know, and it was difficult at that time. So I was kind of hurt on the inside, but I was showing it off to be that I was perfect, you know. So I kind of feel like every man does that to himself in some sort of way for something, you know. So I kind of interpreted my own feelings that I felt at that time into Christie, and it just showed a lot better than I thought it would, you know.
It certainly does. And you, Brendan mentioned community, and you mentioned you had a son at a young age. Your son plays the younger you in this.
He does. My son Keanu, he plays a younger Christie, which I'm delighted about, but also he's delighted about, like, every time he sees himself, he calls himself famous, so he loves it.
And what age was he when he was in the film?
This film was 2 years ago, so he was 3 years old at the time.
Okay. And so, if not to pry, but what age were you when he was born?
I just turned 18 when he was born.
Okay, okay. So you were a young father in that sense of the phrase.
Well,
fair play to you. Brendan, it's very Cork, and I mean that as a compliment. At times I was straining, because I'm a dirty dub, you know, although there were a lot of similarities between the north side of Dublin and the north side of Cork where I grew up. But you clearly wanted it to be Cork. And if this movie is to travel, you know, you don't care if people are straining to hear maybe what people are saying, but was that from the get-go, this had to be as much as it can be a real Cork?
Oh, 100%. And I think, so me and Alan O'Gorman, the writer, we're both from Cork, and like many Cork people, we love Cork. And it was very important across the board that this film was authentic. But we would love, the films we would love and the TV shows we would love, things like The Wire or something where, like, you know, the young men in that might speak in slang and you mightn't understand what they're saying, but you kind of, you're still following the story, and it gives such a great sense of place. And that's what we wanted for this. And we reckon that if we just leaned into the accent, leaned into the colloquialisms, and not try and dumb it down for people, it would be better. You know, I think you've got to give the audiences a bit more respect, I think. And I think a lot of people maybe outside of Ireland never think of Ireland like how it's presented in this film, which is authentic, you know? And I think that's kind of exotic for people, you know? It's like, I always love being, you know, maybe with films, being transported to a place I never even knew kind of existed, but then also being able to relate to a story there. And I think that's what Christie does. And I'm very proud that we really leaned into it. And I've been making music videos and stuff all my life in Cork. And this really was, I think, my love letter to the city in a way, or something like that.
Tell me this. I mentioned Danny's young son, Keanu, who's in it. I meant to ask, Shane's daughter, gorgeous baby in it. Whose baby is that?
They were twins from up in the area. AJ.
Okay.
I think AJ ended up being the lead baby, and we never had to use the backup baby.
Is that in the credits, backup baby?
I don't know. But honest to God, played a blinder, like,
and yeah.
But with babies, you can't script it too much, as you can imagine. So you just have to roll and improvise around what the baby does. But I must say, and Danny was amazing when we did the short film as well. Danny has a really special way with babies. Babies just love Danny. And there's a scene in the middle of the film where the baby's asleep in his arms.
Yeah.
Which was never written. It only happened because the baby fell asleep in his arms. And Danny hadn't met this baby before, which is kind of amazing. So we were just being really quiet, tiptoeing around, trying to capture the scene. And it's really stunning, like, you know.
Yeah. So,
superstar baby, superstar Danny.
I tell you, yeah, great baby. And the baby whisperer, Danny. Danny, I know you initially wanted to go into the army, but now here you are an actor. Is this you for life now? Have you gotten the bug and you can't imagine doing anything else, or how do you see it now?
Yeah, I don't know. I always had my life based around going to the army and living in the barracks and, you know, going on deployments. But I don't know, I started acting, and at first I didn't really know, because I never really thought that, you know, I'm from the north side of Cork, who's going to take me as an actor, you know. But so when I started, it was like, oh yeah, the money's great, I love it. But I don't know, there was something about it, like I was rapping from the age of 9 to 17, and just when I started acting, it just felt so natural. And like, I loved turning up every day, I loved going on camera, I loved doing scenes, and everyone that I worked with on the first few years that I was an actor was absolutely beautiful and brilliant, you know. So it's kind of just enticed me to stay, because it's something that I like doing. I don't feel like getting up, when I get up early in the morning to go acting, it's not too much of a hassle, because I love doing it, you know. It's not like a job.
Yeah, well, you've got it, man, unquestionably. And then finally, Brendan, we come to that awkward moment in every interview you've done for the last 10-12 years where we ask you about Take Me to Church.
Yes.
2 billion and counting. Has that had a big effect on your career? Because you know, as you go on, it'll probably be a footnote, and people like me will mention it less as things go on and you make more movies. But does it, like, what are your thoughts on that now? Because it's over 10 years ago at this stage.
I know. It had a massive impact on my career. It kind of put me on the map a bit, or allowed me to go and do other things, like make my first short film or make TV commercials or make bigger music videos, all of these things which have helped make me the director I am today. So like, it was huge. And it was also probably, even though it's a music video, it's a little short film as well, so like, yeah, gave me the confidence to tell these type of stories, and that, you know, I had the ability to tell them and move people and stuff like that. So it gave me huge confidence to be like, okay, this is what I want to do now. So like, I'll always hold it so close to my heart, and I don't mind talking about it.
Okay. Well, we are here finally to talk about Christie, which is a terrific watch. It's in cinemas from the 29th of August. The story was co-written and directed by Brendan Canty, and it stars Danny Power, a person we're going to be hearing a lot more about in years to come. Simple message is go see Christie. Guys, thanks a million.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Do you have any idea what you're thrown away by? You're never going to get a foster home like that again.
You're Shane's brother, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Christy.
Where'd you get the chain?
It was Mam's.
The unbelievable technique. You must have been watching Mary Poppins, are you?
Christy, is someone here for you? Hey.
Not in bed after work.
Come on, don't be boring.
Oh. What's Shane like then?
You don't really know him, do you?
You have no idea, boy. I'm the only one who ever looked after you. I didn't ask you to do it, did I?
Just can't let the past get you down. You can't have a future.
A little clip there from Christy, which is now in cinemas from this Friday, the 29th of August. And you heard me talking there to Danny Power, its star, its rising star, and its director, and the man who co-wrote the story, Brendan Canty. So do check it out. A lovely movie. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch with me at any stage, you can email screentime@newstalk.com. I'll just remind you, this show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. And it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend. If you're at the EP, stay dry and enjoy. And I'll talk to you all next week.